Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Perkins Platform. This is a solutions-oriented podcast and live radio show. Each broadcast, we dedicate just about 30 minutes to explore topics of interest for leaders and professionals in education and a variety of other disciplines. This is your host, Brian Perkins. So a lot of you have tuned in today knowing that, generally my podcast and radio show is live and available to listen starting on Wednesdays, usually after 6 p.m. This week is a very special week because I'm in celebration of 10 years as a radio show and podcast. You know, I've had people laugh and say, are you serious? 10 years as a podcast? Have podcasts been around that long? Well, yeah, they have. A little longer than 10 years, but I got in pretty early on podcasts and just kept plugging away at it. And before you know it, 10 years is here. And so this week we have a broadcast every day at 6 p.m., except Friday, it's at 2 p.m. So tonight I have a special guest with me, and I'm going to tell you about her in just a minute, but I'm going to tell you about the rest of the week so that you can join in, and then I'll introduce tonight's guest. Tomorrow night we have an episode with three special guests. The topic is Black Men Don't Cry, and it's with Dr. Dennis Chambers, Michael Eatman, and Dr. Victor Ferguson. On Wednesday is Why Leaders Lie with an author and professor, Eric Alterman. On Thursday, again, 6 p.m., is a panel of current school leaders from all over the country, Miami, Chicago, L.A., with the topic, What's Changed in School Leadership? And finally, on Friday, we close out with a special simulcast that's going to be on YouTube Live, but also live radio right here, an open forum on educational leadership where we have a live studio audience of leaders and aspiring school leaders broadcasting live from New York City. So tonight I'm here in New York City broadcasting live with an author and parent of New York City schools. She is a Amazon best-selling author and has written in New York Times. She wrote a book, Getting into New York City Kindergarten, Getting in New York City High School, as well as she's produced a website on New York City school secrets focused on parents helping other parents with the educational process in New York. So she's written in Education Post, New York Daily News, New York Post. She lives in New York City with her husband and her three children. And I'm delighted to start this week with an education topic with Alina Adams. Welcome, Alina.
Thank you so much for having me, Brian, and thank you for having me celebrate your 10 years. I remember when podcasts first began a decade ago, and people weren't really sure what they were going to be, so you got in right on the ground floor.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks so much. It's exciting and exciting to look forward. You know, I have said to my audience over and over again that, you know, really I love having conversations with so many interesting people who have written, and you are no exception. I'm glad to have you on, and thank you again for agreeing to come on the show. You know, there's so many things that we could talk about, and I would like to start with, you know, I know you're a parent, and it kind of seems like that you started out with getting in to New York City kindergarten, probably after your experience with your kids in kindergarten, and as they've moved on through the system, looked into following up with that with New York City high schools. Is that right?
Well, that's exactly what happened. You're 100% correct. To back it up a little bit, my background is in writing novels and in television production. So that's what I was doing professionally. But then I had a child in New York City. My husband is a born and bred New Yorker, born and raised in Harlem. He's one of those people, you know, he believes there's probably other cities in the world, but why really test that theory? So I knew that we would be living in New York and raising our children in New York. And so sure. when we were applying our oldest son to kindergarten, he's 23 now, I was just stunned. I was blown away by how complicated the process was and how difficult the city and the Department of Ed made finding even the most basic information, something as simple as what school am I zoned for, much less what programs does this school offer, how do I apply to this school. So after I went through the whole process with my oldest, I said, okay, parents need to know. I'm one of those information needs to be out there people. I always say you can't have true school choice until you know all of your choices. And so because my background was in being a novelist and in television production, I had worked for ABC Sports, I'd worked for ABC Daytime, ESPN, TNT. So I had done a lot of nonfiction television production in addition to writing fiction. I said, hey, you know what fixes everything? Books. Books fix everything. So I went ahead and I wrote my first book, Getting into NYC Kindergarten, and I said, well, that's it. Everything I know, I put down in this book. I made it available on Amazon for $9.99, which was the lowest I could possibly be. As I said, you know, if you can't afford the book for $9.99, you have problems beyond what I can help you with. For me, if your issue is trying to get into school, I wrote this book and I thought, oh, well, that's easy. It's done. I solved the problem. But it turns out that people wanted more information. For instance, at my son's preschool, they said, well, will you come in and give a workshop? And I'd never done that before, but I'm always one of those say yes, you know, in the sense that if the universe throws you something, say yes. So I said yes, and I came in. And I did a workshop at my son's preschool, and people like, well, I still have questions. Do you do one-on-one consults? And I thought, yes. And then I started hearing, will you come speak at this other preschool? And I said, yes. It sort of grew so much bigger. I thought, because honestly, I didn't hold anything back in the book. If I knew it, I put it down, and I also made it an electronic book, so there were links to everything, to the website where you register, to websites where you can get more information. I wasn't keeping anything back, but people really wanted to talk to me. And so it grew from there. And then my oldest got old enough where he had to apply to New York City High School. And as I like to say, getting into New York City High School makes getting into kindergarten feel like warm puppies and kittens in a basket. It is so much more draconian, so much more insane that I wrote a book about getting into NYC high school. And again, will you give a workshop? Yes. You know, I go to churches. I go to middle schools. I go to community organizations that might be sports focused or some just anywhere where there are families that desperately need this information. I go there. So it turned out that, yes, I ended up doing this because I went through all of it myself in the sense that I saw how difficult it was and I wanted to make it easier for other people.
Wow. Thank you. Yeah. And I don't know a lot about it, but I have heard stories about people having to start looking as soon as a mother, and this may be an exaggerating for some, but as soon as a mother learns of a pregnancy, she starts looking for places for kindergarten or for preschool. And then, I mean, that's what it was, say, 20 years ago. Then I heard, and again, maybe an exaggeration, before pregnancy, you better know where you're going to put your kid. I've heard horror stories, and I can only hope that some of that gets better over time. And thank you for the work you've done to help parents do that.
Sorry to interrupt, but I was going to say it's a bit apocryphal, but I will tell you that the youngest student that I've ever been consulted about was 6 months old. And I did have one parent ask me when would be a good time to get pregnant. I did explain that that depends. Are you looking at public school or private school? Because the cutoffs for birthdays are different. But I will tell you this. I do recommend people start thinking about the process 2 years in advance if moving is on the table. If you are open to moving into a school zone, then I strongly recommend people give themselves 2 years, because that will give you time to actually find an apartment you like. Because what happens is sometimes people panic at the last minute and then they rent a place, you know, there's three of them and it's a one bedroom. So what I recommend people do is, if they are open to moving for a school, which, as you know, is sort of a tried and true tradition, people talk about how, oh, you know, I'm against school choice, but then they rent in a zone that they want to go to the school and don't see that that they are exercising school choice by doing that.
Yeah.
So if people are open to that, then I do give them 2 years. I wouldn't say when the stick turns blue, I wouldn't say necessarily then, but you might as well start thinking about it. If you, for instance, like I have some people say, well, I really want to stay in Brownstone, Brooklyn. Well, you know, it can take a long time to find what you're looking for that you can afford in Brownstone, Brooklyn. So the more time you can give yourself with a school zone in mind, the better.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, Alina, you're dating yourself, because they don't have sticks that turn blue anymore. They say pregnant now, or not pregnant.
Oh,
you know, they're digital.
Okay, so. My kids are 23. My kids are 23. The middle one is going to turn 19 next week, and my youngest is 15. So, yes, I am dating right now.
Exactly. So, but thank you for that. And so those are available. Those of you who are interested, thank you for the advice. Those of you who are interested, the titles of those books are Getting Into New York City Kindergarten and Getting Into New York City High School. And you might, I've been to the website, New York City, NYC, actually. NYC
School Secrets.
Yeah, schoolsecrets.com. And so I'm really interested in talking to you about some of your thoughts. You wrote about the idea of when grades and test scores don't match. Now, some people listening in, you may be wondering, so what is that about? Even more recently, you know, just kind of the pervasive problem, not just in New York City, but around the country, with an age-old, and I won't call it a phenomena, but a age-old challenge that is known as grade inflation. A new report was just published this past May looking at the past decade of grade inflation and looking at in high school, where they were just saying that basically high school grade point averages have gone up. But while even though GPAs increased, that the composite scores on the ACT at least have gone down. Now, I know there are a lot of people out there that say, you know, there are a lot of problems with these standardized tests. And I think that even more so compounds the issue of why this is something we should be talking about, is that students are getting grades that don't necessarily match what they're able to do or what's being measured. So however you look at it, there's an issue there. And so the report that I'm talking about is one that's available. It's for free. It's a research report, just came out in May. Authors are Sanchez and Moore, two researchers that were hired by ACT, that is entitled Grade Inflation Continues to Grow in the Past Decade. That's the title. And so I know, Alina, you had some thoughts and some experience apparently with this.
Mm-hmm.
And so would love to hear your thoughts on this. And so we have students who show up and do very well in school, and then parents are really confused by their performance on whether it's the SAT, the ACT, or any number of other measures, the AP exams, for that matter. Love to get your take on that.
Well, the piece that I believe brought me to your attention was a piece that I did at the 74, which refers to the 74 million, you know, the 74 million students that are in America. And in the piece, I talked about my daughter, who just finished ninth grade at one of the better New York City public schools, and she got all A's in her courses, and then she went to take the Regents exam, which in New York State are necessary for graduation. And although she passed both of the Regents exams that she took, she only achieved mastery in one of them. And in order to pass the Regents exams, you really at some point need only to get about a third of the questions right. So it was quite a disconnect between her grades and between what her standardized test scores in this particular case on the Regents showed. Also in New York City, which was something else that I quoted in that 74 piece, is there are schools where they show every single student has gotten either an A or a B or at least passed their course and been promoted into the next grade, but not a single student has scored proficient on the state test. Now, my husband is a teacher. He actually went to teacher's college at one point. And he always says, he says to me, you know, if a kid is getting a 95 in my class and I see an 85 on a test, I go, that's okay, because it was timed and the questions might have been phrased in a way that he's not used to. But he says, if a student is getting a 95 in my class and they can't even hit a 30 on the Regents exam or 33, then that shows something wrong. Something is not connected. He said, yes, you know, in fact, that's why he's the one who looked at my daughter's scores and he said, okay, they're lower than her grades, but I think they're within the range of normal. I yield to him on these educational issues, but we're talking about the fact that there are schools where entire grades are graduating without a single person passing. And something else that I quoted in my 74 piece was Arne Duncan, who was Barack Obama's Secretary of Education for 7 years. He wrote in his book that when he was working in Chicago, he had all these students that were getting A's and B's in the public schools, but when it came time to take the SAT or the ACT, they weren't even close. It's not like they were on the low end. They were nowhere near hitting the kind of numbers they would need to be college ready. And as Arne wrote, he said, this is a lie that is being told to parents. Parents are being told that their kids are A and B students, which, you know, the court uses a standard of what a reasonable person. If your child is getting A's and B's in their high school, would a reasonable person assume that their child would be ready to go to college when they graduate? I think a reasonable person would, but these scores are not demonstrating that.
And so, but so what do we think this is about? Is this really, you know, I haven't talked to teachers, but I know about it specifically, but I know that I've been in enough conversations where you hear things about parents challenging, and so some teachers are gun shy, but you also hear about in some places, and again, these are national, this is a national issue, this is not just New York City, but I've heard people talk about where in some places there's pressure from leaders in at various levels about grades and what have you. I know and I have the luxury of doing this at the university of saying, you know, to my students, listen, don't focus on grades. You know, I've had students who come to me with A minuses and in tears asking why did they get an A minus. But in some places, you know, there's a lot of pressure on teachers not to assign grades that are low grades. What are you hearing either parents or other people about why the grade inflation then?
Two things. Those are two separate questions. After this piece ran, I got numerous emails from teachers which began with, don't use my name or keep this confidential, but I have teachers tell me things like, I was told by the principal I can't fail anyone. So even if they don't do a lick of work, I have to give them at least a D. Or people say, I was told you have to have this many A's in the class, this many B's, this many C's, and this many D's. So you can do that math any way you want. But the fact is, I have to show that there's X number of A's, X number of B's, X number of C's. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, what I'm hearing from parents, and I don't disagree. There are definitely parents who are pressuring teachers. I don't want to pretend that this is only an issue from the administrative side. There's definitely teachers will tell me, a parent will go over my head and they'll call the principal and they'll say, how dare you allow this? So I don't want to suggest that parents are not pressuring teachers in some cases, obviously. But I also hear from parents and they say, I go into a parent-teacher conference. And in New York, by the way, in public schools, those are literally 3 minutes apiece with each teacher. So it's not exactly like you're having an in-depth conversation. Or, but, you know, some teachers will call, and I don't mean to suggest that that doesn't happen either.
Yeah, yeah.
But I speak to the teacher, and the teacher says to me, oh, she's doing great. She's doing terrific. She's doing A-level work. She's exactly where she should be. And then my child takes a regent or a state test or something like that, and my A student receives a 2, just as an example. In New York City, you can get a 4, 3, 2, 1. 3 is meets expectations, 4 is above expectations, 2 is below. And so my child who is getting A's, and the teacher tells me she's doing great, she's got no problems, got a 2. And I go to the teacher and I say, I don't understand, what is this? And the teacher says to me, oh, the people judging the test, they have no idea. I see her every day. I know she's doing fine. Listen to me. Don't listen to them. But again, if I can go back to my husband, the teacher, the way that he was explaining it to me, he says, yes, if I have an A student who has test anxiety or who maybe even just missed bubbles, you know, these things happen, I see, you know, like a 75%, I'm not thrilled and I'll want to work with the student more, but that at least shows he has command of 3/4 of the material. But if an A student cannot even get 33%, I mean, if you're bubbling in, statistically speaking, you should be able to guess. You should be able to do all C because everybody knows the answer is always C. So you should be able to go down and do all C for every question, and you should be able to get more, at least close to 1/3 of the answers correct, just guessing.
Yeah.
Something wrong is happening here.
Yeah, yeah. And I, you know, I've had various experiences, you know, I've had teachers, sometimes me as a parent, come in and ask questions about, why one grade or another, but more because I was looking for someone to tell me long before. I remember one of my daughters who had been published in a book of an anthology of poetry as an 8th grader, scored, you know, was getting A's all in middle school at one of the top middle schools in the state in Connecticut, and got to 9th grade. And as a lot, some kids do, 9th grade is a tough year of transition. And about a week and a half before grades are coming out, I get a call that she's in danger of failing 9th grade English. And I want to know why, or more importantly, how is that even possible? Only to learn that they said she hadn't turned in homework assignments. And my question was really about why didn't you give her an A, but it was, why didn't I know early enough to be able to intervene? And so some of that too could be what's going on with the inflation, where people are.
I had a mother say to me, they called me in April to say that he's failing. What am I going to do in April about him failing? Why didn't I get this call in October or at least in January?
Yeah. Yeah. Really, really tough. And so what are your recommendations to people about this? I mean, you know, I know these scores often come out much later after the test has been taken, though, right? You know, they don't come back, you know, in a matter of weeks. I think they've gotten better over the years, and that doesn't matter. I mean, I know in New York City, but it doesn't matter where you are. I know some places where the students take the test in the spring and parents don't know, kids don't know until in the fall when, you know, that here's the score.
That definitely happens.
Yeah.
No,
so
that definitely happens. Well, one of the things that I always talk about test scores when I talk to parents about schools, I say test scores don't tell you everything, but they tell you something. They're one data point. And the fact is you really need to hold the schools accountable in the sense that you, here's the thing, you can't keep being sort of brushed off with, oh, those tests are flawed, those tests, the numeric way that they're calculated are flawed. I see your child in the class every day. I am the top arbiter of how they're doing. You can't just be compliant with that, unless, of course, you're fine with that. And the fact is, I have some families who deliberately choose, you know, schools with a progressive pedagogy where, in fact, students are encouraged to opt out, to not take the test. And if you're fine with that, just understand that that's what it is. I have so many families that I worked with who were ecstatic about the fact that their child was in a school that defined itself as progressive and that, you know, cultivated a joy of learning and it was student directed until they woke up one morning and found out their third grader couldn't read. They
Wow.
went to the teacher and the teacher said, oh, she hasn't expressed an interest in reading yet. When she does, we'll be there to support her. So you have one of two things here. Either understand that's what you're getting into and be prepared for the fact that your child in third grade might not be interested in reading, or look at a school where there's more accountability when it comes to the test scores. Because while your own individual child's test scores might not be ready until 4 months later, you can look at, is this a school that tends to produce high test scores, which means this is how their pedagogy is oriented. Mm-hmm. And if that's what you want, you should do that. And if you want something else, just as I like to say, the rules apply to everyone, not just you. Because
right.
I have so many people who love everything that a school says until somehow it's negative towards them. Like they love the progressive ethos until their child isn't reading in third grade. Or conversely, they love the high-scoring charter schools like, say, at Success Academy, but they don't like that that comes with a lot of homework and a lot of test prep. So my main thing to tell parents is when you're choosing, and here's that word choice again, a school, you have to buy what they're selling. No school is trying to trick you into sending your child to a school that does something opposite from what they claim. So if you want a school that gets kids ready for the state tests, you have to see the accountability and you have to be willing to do the work because it means, you know, test prep and worksheets coming home and parents being expected to work with their kids. Or if you want a school that is very proud of their low test scores, I have had people say, this school shows, you know, that my child is not a cookie cutter child. This is not a cookie cutter school and they're not treating her like she's a cog in a machine. Fabulous. That's what you want. That's what you should be able to have. But don't completely lose it when it turns out that their child is not performing as well on standardized tests as maybe you would like to be. So the most important thing is you sort of asked what can be done, and I turned it back on the parents because as a parent myself, I know I can't march into a school and change a school. I keep quoting my husband, but he says, remember, anytime you work in a school, you're working to change things for other people's kids because by the time whatever you're working on to happen happens, your kid will be gone. But as a parent, when you are choosing the school, you have to be prepared for both sides of it. Do you want a school that focuses on test scores or do you want a school that focuses on something else with the understanding that, yes, you might not have the test scores. And when she sits for the SAT or the ACT, understand that because you weren't looking or paying any attention to test scores up to this point, nothing magic's going to happen. If your child has not been scoring as competent up on state tests, they're not going to sit down for the SAT and suddenly become a savant at taking standardized tests. It's a skill like anything else.
Sure. Well, fascinating. You know, I also, while we have just a couple more minutes, I wanted to get your thoughts. You know, also in the news, we've heard people say, oh, it's coming. These universities are not going to look at test scores anymore. And it's coming. And so it almost seems like it's here now because I just read and this was a few months back, that more than two-thirds of colleges and universities aren't going to require the SAT for the 22 admission cycle. And so that, and that includes some elite institutions like Harvard and Stanford, and the University of California, I know, has dropped SAT permanently as an admission requirement. So I'd love
nothing permanently. There's one thing we know, permanently by one can be permanent by another. But
that's true.
But here's the thing, though. First of all, my middle child has just been through the college process, and for sure I can tell you that, you know, your Caltechs, your Harvey Mudd, and your MITs are not dropping test scores, not the more math and engineering focus. So we're talking more about the liberal arts universities. But here's the thing, though. That means that the personal statement, the essays, all of those things are going to become much, much more important. And here's a fun fact. Everybody's talking about equity. The people who can afford a writing coach, an admissions consultant who's going to work with them on their statement, are much wealthier and much more elite than the people who sit down with an SAT prep book and really grind through it. So if we were trying to control for the effect of, you know, tutoring and big money by getting rid of the standardized test, we've actually swung in the completely wrong direction. Guess what? Most people can learn how to answer a standardized test question. Writing an essay is a lot harder. I say this as a writer. I say this as someone who reads things that kids write. There are kids who are very good at standardized tests who are terrible writers, because a lot of schools don't teach writing per se. They certainly don't teach grammar and other things. So if this is an equity push, I don't see how it's doing anything but the exact opposite.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you for that. And an excellent point. And I'll tell you, you've given me, and I'm sure people listening in, a lot to think about here, especially as we talk. We've talked a lot about the equity question here on this broadcast. So as I told you before we started, and you agreed that 30 minutes goes by so fast. We're already at 32 minutes. So I want to tell you, I really appreciate you coming on. You've added to me, and I'm sure everyone who's eavesdropping on our conversation today have benefited greatly. And so I know you're in New York City. If our paths cross, I look forward to talking to you again. But until then, again, thank you for being on the show. Go well and stay well.
Thank you so much for having me.